Hey y'all, this is Allison from nerdvampire.wordpress.com, and you are listening to Some Cast It Hot. Today we are going to be talking about X-Men First Class and give our recommendations for 60s throwback movies. But first, it's time for our recently viewed movies.
All right, hi, I'm Alex from Film Forger, and the last movie I watched was actually Super 8, but instead I'm going to talk about Every Which Way But Loose, which I watched the night before, and anyone who was on Twitter probably noticed me drunkenly commenting on it for like 2 hours. Periodically, my boyfriend and I will get drunk and watch a movie, and when that happens, that means the Twitter is always open, because that's the main time we use Twitter, is when we're drunk.
It's really funny because I follow both of you, so I'm like trying to think what the situation is. Like you're both on your couch just watching a movie, not talking to each other on Twitter.
Exactly what it is. We just Twitter at one another instead of speaking aloud. It's really sad. Anyway, so yeah, anyone who doesn't follow me, and why you wouldn't, I don't know, because I'm hilarious. Every Which Way But Loose is a movie from 1978, and it's Clint Eastwood, and co-starring alongside an ape. It's the best movie ever, alone, for that reason. It's Clint Eastwood and a monkey. Like, there's nothing else you can need in a movie. It's awesome. And Clint Eastwood is a street fighter, and he's super badass, and he falls in love with the worst lady in the world, played by his wife, who is awful, and thinks she's a country singer, and thinks she's an actress. It's a double threat. And he, like, follows her around with his monkey, trying to win her love. Even though she keeps, like, trying to escape him, he kind of stalks her. And in the meantime, he's got to beat up a lot of people, and the monkey's there. This is actually the plot of this movie. I'm not making this up. It's kind of great. And it's just, I don't know, it's really silly. It doesn't make any sense. And Clint Eastwood pummels the shit out of everyone for no reason half the time. Like, he'll see a person in a bar and just punch him just because. And it's got Beverly D'Angelo, who a lot of people know as the mom in the National Lampoon movies, but I know as the lady from Hair. And it's got a dude who thinks he's Jerry Reed, who is like the friend in Smokey and the Bandit, but he's not as good as Jerry Reed, so I imagined him in the role. And yeah, it's really silly. I don't know why it's not more famous than it is. Like, have you guys heard of this movie?
I've heard of it, I've never seen it.
Yeah, that's how I've been too.
Yeah, I think it's sort of infamous because it's like, oh, the Clint Eastwood and a monkey movie. It's just like, it's so silly and it's so ridiculous, but it's fun. And it's not, I think the woman ruins it because she's so awful. Like, every time she comes on screen, I wanted to throw up or go to sleep. Mostly because I've been drinking and that makes me sleepy. But otherwise, it's really good. And it's kind of fun to hate on her. You know, I love having an actress or an actor in a movie that I hate because then I can just make fun of them. But yeah, so Every Which Way But Loose. And I have a theme song, which automatically makes a movie my favorite movie. Because that's like my favorite thing ever is when a movie has its own theme song. I forget who sings it, but it's pretty good. So yeah,
Does it
last movie
have
I
a good
watched.
title sequence to go along with the theme song?
Yeah, it's like plays over the credits as they're like showing the area. I forget where it takes place. It's like something probably in the south. I'm not sure. It's sort of, there's like yeah, I don't remember where it takes place, but it's definitely sort of like southern-ish area that they go fishing and you know there are like truckers everywhere. I don't know. It's like that sort of a movie.
What?
It takes place in Los Angeles? Oh, it does. Never mind. Someone was telling me it was Hicksploitation, and I was like, really? Because that's like Burt Reynolds movies or Hicksploitation, like Gator and Smokey and the Bandit, so I thought it was like a Southern movie. But actually, it takes place in Los Angeles, so I apologize. They move around a lot, is the issue. And they go to Colorado at one point, so I wasn't sure where it started. The credit sequence is like the song playing, and he's like driving around, and then later you meet the monkey. And Ruth Gordon's there. Maude from Harold and Maude is in this movie. And she's awesome. She's a badass old lady who's got a shotgun and she cusses up a storm and she's really funny. Think about
Don't
that.
even know like how to react to the synopsis of this movie.
It's pretty ridiculous. It's just like it's goofy. And it just came out on Blu-ray, actually. You can get the there's a sequel. So both movies are in like a dual Blu-ray pack.
Have you
If
seen
you want.
the
I have, yeah, I don't I saw it a while ago. So I don't remember too well. I remember it being not as good, but it's still, you know, Clint Eastwood hanging out with his ape His name is Clyde. I don't remember what the storyline is, to be honest. But yeah, it's called Every Which Way You Can, I think, that one. Because this is Every Which Way But Loose.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's a silly time. I would recommend it for fans of Clint Eastwood. He's shirtless at one point. That's pretty cool. He has a bunch of points, actually. He takes off his shirt to fight, I just remember.
Okay.
Anyway, continuing on. Sasha, what was the last movie you watched? Was it as awesome as mine?
Yeah, so I saw Super 8 this week. So let's talk about Super 8. Allison, have you seen it?
I haven't.
So I guess a little quick synopsis without saying much. It's directed by J.J. Abrams, produced by Spielberg. Everybody's heard of it. It's about a boy named Joe and his group of friends trying to do a monster movie for a film festival. And his father is the deputy, and it's played by Kyle Chandler, which is pretty great to see him in, like, a starring role, big Hollywood movie.
I don't know who Kyle Chandler is, I'm going to be honest with you. The dad?
There's a lot of people in town here that, like, are obsessed with him. He's from Friday Night Lights.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, well, it's very good. You should watch it.
Wait, yeah, oh my god, I knew he looked familiar. He's from Early Edition. Probably a superior show to Friday Night Lights, everyone. Early Edition?
Early Edition?
Yeah, that movie, that TV show was awesome. It's from the 90s. It's about a guy who had a cat that would deliver him a newspaper every morning, but it was tomorrow's newspaper. So he spent his day trying to, like, help people out before they, like, died the next day.
Huh.
It was an awesome show.
That sounds amazing.
It is.
I have no idea how, like, I need to see this show now.
It had, like, four seasons. It ran for a while. It used to air. I used to see the reruns on some channel when I was, like, a kid. It was on after I came home from school, I remember. But, yeah.
Sorry, I was, like, on the Wikipedia page. I'm like, I need to watch this right now.
I'm sorry. That was totally, like, a non sequitur. Sorry. It was just, I forgot to look him up, but I knew he looked familiar when I was watching Super 8.
Yeah.
So yeah, so sorry I haven't seen Friday Night Lights, but
okay. So we also need to watch that. But so they're making a monster movie, and I don't know, like, how much should we tell them that happens.
Well, I guess, what do you know from the trailer, that they catch something mysterious while they're shooting their zombie movie?
Yeah,
and stuff happens.
And stuff happens, yeah. And it's. It's really fun. It's affectionate toward old school blockbuster movies, specifically Spielberg's. Some people are saying it's like fan winking, like it's too much. But I thought it was really affectionate and genuine. And you should really. The last 10 minutes aren't very good because they try to resolve it a little too quickly and clean cutly. The credit sequence is worth the last 10 minutes of the movie.
I agree.
The credit sequence is awesome. Lots of people are saying, oh, it's better than the actual movie, and it's really good, but the movie itself is so much fun and genuine, and I went with a group of people that just outright hated it, and it was just so disappointing. I was, like, my heart broke.
And I think people are taking this movie, like, too seriously.
Oh, definitely.
You know, because it's, or, like, they're thinking too much about what it's referencing, and, you know, like, is it unique? And, like, I don't think it has many original ideas, but it's done so well, and the characters are fun, and it's just, like, a good time. Yeah. Like, people need to just ease off and just enjoy themselves, and then it's really good. But, so it's too, I know it's too bad, because I know a lot of people have been having negative reactions to the film. But then I've seen some people who love it and think it's, like, the best of the year. So I think it's a little bit polarizing in that way.
So, so is it J.J. Abrams kind of creating his own Spielberg movie? Like, I know people keep saying it's referencing things, but is he specifically referencing that style, or is he going more for, like, general science fiction movies from a couple decades ago?
It's very much like this is his own Spielberg movie.
Yeah, okay.
It's pretty explicit.
Yeah,
which is fine.
It's not like it's just so genuine that you forget about it, that he's totally ripping off Spielberg.
Well, actually, I liked the references. Like, I actually just saw Close Encounters for the first time, like, last week. So it's, and I loved it. So it's really on my mind. And obviously, you know, I've seen The Goonies, and I don't remember E.T. too well, but so I was thinking more along the lines of The Goonies and Close Encounters. And I could see, especially with Close Encounters, because I just watched it, a lot of little specific references. And I thought that was cool. Like, I didn't think of it as ripping off. I thought of it more as, like, homage, especially because Spielberg produced this movie. You know, it's not like he's a random dude stealing all of Spielberg's ideas without his knowledge. Like, I thought it more as, you know, a little bit Spielberg's passing the mantle to Abrams, or they're just collaborating to, you know, to kind of, like, have a throwback to the 70s, 80s movies. Like, it didn't feel, I didn't think of it as a bad thing. I thought it was sort of cute.
Yeah, speaking of throwbacks, have you seen the poster they just released for this movie?
Oh my god, the awesome one that's, like, painted?
Yeah.
Yeah, I just did this morning.
The big one on my wall. Holy crap, like, I can't believe that they came out with that. And I was just, like, so happy, and, like, where can I buy it? But obviously, can't buy it yet. Yeah, the only thing that's, like, radically different from the Spielberg movies is there's a female character who has a huge role. And I was just, like, so happy about that the entire time. And Elle Fanning's actually, she actually does a good job, which I was not expecting.
Yeah, she's, like, really good. I hadn't seen her in much besides Somewhere, but I like her a lot.
I'll add it to my list of summer movies to see.
And I think it definitely benefits from the theater.
Theater viewing, so try and see it. With the big surround sound.
Yeah. Exactly. And the Legend Square will really just hit you in the right spot when it's on the big screen.
God.
Light shining everywhere.
It's one constant lens flare. There's only one lens flare in the entire movie, but it's 2 hours long.
I almost find that kind of thing endearing now. It's so ridiculous, and he knows it. Like, he knows it's his thing, but he can't stop.
There was lens flare in scenes where there was, like, no significant light source.
And I'm just like, lens flare on top of lens flare.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, it's okay, but yeah, it's getting a bit much now. We'll see what Star Trek 2 does.
Oh, and I also love that he was, like, trying to push the whole that's mint to be, like, but
was that ever a phrase?
I don't know, but it's in the movie, but it said maybe 3 or 4 times, but it's only in the span of, like, 10 minutes.
So you guys, like, are mint. This is mint.
Yeah. It's like, oh yeah, I want a catchphrase. So he does it, like, 4 times in a row, and then they never do it again.
Forget about it. It's kind of silly. I mean, you know, I wasn't alive at the time this movie's taking place, so I have no idea of, like, that was a phrase in the 70s.
Yeah, I don't know, but
I feel like it's one that maybe Abrams said when he was a kid but didn't catch on, and now this is his chance to make it happen.
That's it.
Kids the world over will be saying this phrase. but yeah, otherwise, good summary.
Yeah. Allison? All
right, so I finally saw No Country for Old Men.
Sorry, I was drinking, and then I thought, wow, that's good for you.
It's just, when it comes to movies that win, like, a billion awards, I kind of end up, and, you know, everyone I know is recommending it to me, it kind of makes me drag my feet.
And about definitely the same way, as I totally understand.
Yeah.
Except with the Coen brothers, where I will just see their movies. Well, but, no, I totally get that.
Yeah.
What'd you think?
I really liked it. It's violent, like, I wasn't expecting as much blood as what happened. And I actually couldn't tell what time period it was until I think one character said that it was taking place in the 70s. I thought maybe it had been a little bit more contemporary.
Have you read the book?
No, I haven't. Who wrote the book, anyway?
Cormac McCarthy.
Right.
It's pretty, I mean, I was just wondering, because I feel like you're a bit more of a reader than I am, but I read it after I saw the film, and it's pretty good. It's a really good adaptation of the book. So there's that. I'm not a huge fan of McCarthy's writing style, but I did like the book. But like, if you've seen the film, I feel like it's almost just as good. did you like what's his name, Javier Bardem?
Yeah, I thought he did a lot with not too many lines. Like, he kind of He embodied the character, and as soon as you see him, he's gonna be kind of hard to explain, but like this really unique sort of villain, especially with that weapon of choice.
Is so awesome in that movie. Did he win an Oscar?
Yeah, I think he got Best Supporting.
I think he did too. Yeah.
And other than that, and what really blew me away was the cinematography is so good in it. Like, kind of captures that warm, southwestern glow everywhere, and lots of, like, it makes it feel like it's a western when it's outdoors. And then I keep thinking about one of the hotel room scenes.
That's a great scene.
Yeah.
That's probably my favorite. Well, that and the when he's in the it's like a little like a gas station or something.
Oh, the like convenience store and like the
Yeah, right.
McDonald's. Yeah. Yeah. Those are my favorite scenes. Yeah.
I'm really glad I finally sat down and watched it.
Are you a fan of the Coen Brothers?
Yeah, but only recently. Like, I think I
Oh,
saw
okay.
Fargo only 2 months ago. Yeah. But so, and they
Really?
have kind of a thick filmography, so I'll just work through it.
They do, yeah. I've seen all but two, and it's taken me forever to just like get through all the movies. They're really good and everything, but they just have so much because they're so like prolific,
Right.
and they've been working for a while. I mean, when did Blood Simple come out? That was like 80s, and I think they make a film like every other year, don't they?
Yeah, something like that.
Oh, they're crazy.
Right.
But yeah, glad you saw it because it is really good. Like I know they're like always winning awards and everyone's always going on about their films, but they're also good that I don't resent it. Like as opposed with people who like recommend and overhype stuff all the time, that usually bothers me a lot.
But they are more deserving. I do think there's a little
Exactly.
bit of hype connected to their name, but it's not. What's a better example? Like, it's not Tarantino fanboy
Oh God, yeah. Or
hype.
even now, I'm getting it with I have only just recently seen a Terrence Malick film for the first time.
Right.
I saw Badlands, and like I feel like everyone on the internet, all they ever want to do is talk about Terrence Malick, and the more people talk about him, I'm like, oh, I hate this guy. I hate his movies, even when I haven't seen them.
I'm actually seeing Days of Heaven today, and tomorrow I'm going to see New World.
Oh, are they having like a retrospective or something?
Yeah.
Yeah, I will see. I want to see those other films. I don't want to see Thin Red Line just because I'm not really into war movies. So I might see it eventually, but I'm like, that's not my first choice. I'll see Tree of Life because I know that's supposed to be good, but I refuse to like see the genius that everyone is obsessed with. Because I liked Badlands, but I didn't think it was the greatest thing ever. It didn't like leave a mark on me the way that it seems to have on everyone else, you know? But yeah, but I definitely like it took me a long time to see his movies because I was sick of hearing about him, so I didn't want to watch them. Yeah, I understand. And I think, yeah, people can get the same way with Tarantino. It's like, calm down, everyone. Okay, sorry.
All right.
Should we move on?
Yeah, I think so. So our main discussion is X-Men First Class. And that was.
Alex is like, oh.
Hey, Alex, why don't you give the summary?
Oh, sure. All right, so it's the 1960s, and it's 1962 to be specific. Humankind has evolved to the next form, which is Homo superior. They have the mutant gene, which means that some people have special powers, and that's cool. And there's Eric Lenscher, who is a Polish Holocaust survivor, who has the power to control metal, and he like escapes from. He doesn't escape, sorry. He's like experimented on by Nazis to try and enhance his powers and becomes like really angry and evil, etc. And Charles Xavier, who is a British asshole, who's really smart, I guess, and he has like mind powers. Whenever he puts his first two fingers to his temple, he can read your mind.
It's
Only
like
the fingers on his
he's
temple.
calling people on his cell phone. That's what it
That's
looks like.
ridiculous.
God, every single time he uses his power. Every single time.
It's funny every time, though. Anyway, sorry. Okay, I'll track here. I'll track. All right. Charles Xavier, British asshole who went to Oxford, is very smart and has telepathy powers. He can communicate with you in your mind. He can control you with his mind. He can talk to you and he can, like, take over your body. Yeah, etc. And it's basically in the X-Men universe, they are the great, you know, foes, Xavier on one side, Magneto on the other. Because of Magneto's experiences in the Holocaust, he believes that eventually humans will put mutants in death camps and exterminate them. He's convinced this will happen. So in his mind, he needs to get rid of the humans before they get rid of him. So he has his reasons, which is why he's such a good villain, because you see his side of things. Whereas Xavier is all weepy and wishy-washy and thinks that everyone needs to work together and be peaceful only when he's in charge and manipulates everyone, though, I'll remind you, because Xavier's a dick. it's true, trust me. So in the film, Xavier and his longtime friend Raven, also known as Mystique, who is a shapeshifter, but her natural form is blue, so she has to sort of hide herself, and she poses as the beautiful Jennifer Lawrence. They are recruited by the CIA, including Oliver Platt and Moira MacTaggert, who is not Scottish for some reason, despite being Scottish in the later films. I'll bring that up later. To be sort of a special secret wing of the CIA. And they round up a bunch of other mutants who all have different powers, and they train, and they're going to help with the Cold War, basically, because they're evil mutants, played by Kevin Bacon and January Jones.
Who best are cast decision ever.
And they are very powerful mutants. Kevin Bacon plays Sebastian Shaw, who used to be a Nazi or something, who experimented on Magneto, but is now totally American. And he has the power to absorb energy and then release it again at you. So you basically, the more you punch him, the more powerful it gets. So he's kind of invincible. And January Jones plays Emma Frost, who is a very powerful telepath. It can also turn into a diamond form where she's like, you can't break her, basically. They are trying to start a world war that will destroy all humans and only mutants will rise and they'll have a mutant population. So they're pitting Russia and America against one another and they are responsible for the Cuban Missile Crisis. They're kind of retconning American history here. So, like, Magneto and Xavier and all the other CIA mutants are teaming up to try and stop them from starting a world war. But there are differing philosophies cause problems. Whatever. I'm bored. That wasn't a very good summary. I'm sorry.
No, that was an excellent summary.
I mean, it made sense, right? Kind of. Yeah. All right. So, X-Men. Okay. Well, we all know how I feel about the movie. How do you all feel?
Allison, how do you feel?
Yeah, let's hear Allison's point of view here. Okay. I don't want to shut you down here.
So, I liked the movie, which I know is the unpopular opinion in this podcast and probably amongst most of our blogger friends. But here's the thing. This had what I was looking for in a summer movie, which is pretty male characters. Michael Fassbender and James McAvoy are gorgeous.
Don't get too girly on me. This is sleepover talk.
I know. It had fun action scenes, and yeah, like, I know the plot probably could have been tighter, but for someone who has never really, like, I used to watch the X-Men cartoon show when I was younger, but other than that, I don't know too much about the X-Men. So for me, this was, like, a nice little introduction to, like, here's the idea of mutants. And this is how they sort of react. And if you think of it, like, if the plot had focused a little bit more on just Eric and Charles, it probably would have been tighter, I feel like. And because all of their scenes are pretty good. And as you see their ideologies develop, that was interesting. But when you kind of, they try and develop the other characters, it's like getting weaker and weaker with new characters being introduced. So, yeah.
When we're using the word characters here, it's in quotation marks, right? Because I agree with you, Adam, totally, what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah.
Everyone else is so poorly done. But yeah, no, it's true, because I think that I was under the impression that this film was going to be about Magneto and Xavier's friendship and how it developed and how their schism, because you know based on X-Men in general and also on, you know, the films, that they will eventually be enemies. Mm-hmm. And I do think that's an interesting story, because as much as I hate Xavier, I think their relationship is really interesting. And I think the reason that Magneto is held up as a villain for so long is that, like, he's a very complex character. And I thought that would be the focus, but it really wasn't. Like, there was not at all enough of them, like, building up their relationship.
This movie would have been so much better if all they did was go from Eric's time in the camps to about where they're starting to think of recruiting other mutants. And if that was just their relationship, like Eric's and Xavier's relationship, and if Xavier was the, like, the frat boy, using his powers to, like,
hit on
him. No, but, like, if that was his character throughout the whole movie, and then he changes, like, right at the end, that the movie would be so much better. And I don't think the Xavier in this movie, you know, the asshole, basically, he would never befriend, well, sorry, Magneto would never befriend this Xavier.
Yeah, he's not sympathetic at all. He's kind of snarky the entire time.
And their entire friendship is like one scene, and it's the scene of, like, them on the prostitute's, you know, like, bed, hanging out with champagne. That's the only friendly scene that they have in the entire movie.
And then there's they spend like 5 seconds playing chess at some point, I remember.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, there's a lot of chess in the other movies. You gotta put this in.
Exactly.
God.
No, I know, it's true. But it's, you know, it's an action movie. You can't just have a movie about two dudes being friends. Never heard of that before, have we?
if it was...
Not if
was
they
just,
have
like,
superpowers.
A revenge movie. You know, like, Eric going around the world, him trying to find douchebag guy, I forget his name.
Shaw.
Sebastian Shaw.
Sebastian Douchebag Shaw, as we call him.
Yeah. So if Eric was just going around the world trying to find this guy, and he's doing this under the cover of him trying to find other mutants with Xavier, that had been so good. And then, like, the end would be actually him meeting Sebastian. Right. And then they could have Sebastian in the next movie. And it's just like, and then the entire movie would just be Eric and Xavier, and it wouldn't have all these stupid teenage mutants, and it's just ridiculous.
Yeah, even the entire scene with the Cuban Missile Crisis and them trying to fix it was really weak. As soon as I got back from the movie theater, I kept thinking, oh, that was so an abrupt way of ending it.
Yeah.
And such an awkward way, too. Like, the entire scene is really... like, fun in an action-y sort of way, but dumb in a plot way.
Mm-hmm. I think my issue with this movie, because I had read a little bit about it, I'm for listeners out there who don't know, I'm a pretty obsessive X-Men fan. It's, like, one of my main areas of nerdery. Nerddom, as it were. And I've fallen out a little bit. I haven't read too many of the more recent comics, but I spent most of my high school and, like, 7th and 8th grade time just, like, reading X-Men all the time. And, so, with this movie, I was one of those people who was looking at it. Every time they released a new still image, I was looking at it and poring over every detail and calling all my comic nerd friends and discussing, like, the placement of someone's hair or something. I can't believe Mystique is blonde. Oh, my God. I was going to talk like that. So I was, like... I kept reading all the news about this movie, so I had a lot of reservations going into it, because I already knew so much they were messing up, in my opinion. Just based on pictures of people, I knew that this was wrong, and things that didn't make sense. But I had read a little bit about how it was, like, kind of Bond-influenced, and so when I was watching it, I mean, I thought, I laughed a lot during this movie, but I think usually I wasn't supposed to be laughing. And it kind of turned into a so bad it's good movie for me, because the tone is all over the place.
It's like, just so disparate.
Yeah, I have no idea I want to know how self-aware this movie is. I want to sit Matthew Vaughn down and have a discussion with him. Because at first I thought it was meant to be funny. I thought it was supposed to be lighthearted, kind of poking fun at certain things about, like, 60s action movies and Vaughn movies. some things are just so ridiculous and so over the top. Like the fact that every time they gave a location, it was the most ambiguous location. It was like covert military base or like Russian secret headquarters. And you're like, really? That's the name of the location? Did you put that in as a placeholder and forgot to write the actual name? Oh. And like they had one of my other favorites was they had their training montage, as any movie will. Where all the teenage mutants are learning to use their powers, you know?
And they're all wearing matching sweatshirts.
Matching sweatpants, yeah, it's great. So they have their training montage, and then a little bit after it, you know, you're seeing them all give out of their powers, and everyone's happy, and you're like, okay, cool, enough time has gone by that we're all, like, we're ready for this mission.
Yeah.
And then Mystique is talking to, I think it's Beast, and she says something along the lines of, like, just think of all we've accomplished this week. It's been a week.
And suddenly, tomorrow will decide the course of the world.
Exactly. It's so over the top. And I was like, they have to know. This has to be intentional. But the people I've seen the movie with did not think it was intentional. So now I realize it's just, like, poorly done.
It's
like,
bad. And did
it's
you
just
notice?
A bad movie.
During the training sequence, the director suddenly realized, oh, I could use split screens for everything.
Oh my God, you're right. But only for that part.
It was like for a good 20 minutes, it was entirely split screens to the point where there's like three segments of the screen was the same character in like the same exact still motion.
My theory is that that's a tribute to Ang Lee's Hulk, because that's what he did in the Hulk movie, because he was trying to make a filmic representation of a comic book.
Yeah.
So a lot of times he had the split screens going on, and I understand the idea behind it, but it didn't work at all. But maybe Matthew Vaughn is the one admirer of that movie.
Oh, God.
And it was a reference. I don't know. That was all I could think of. Like, why would you do that? But yeah, can't say the way it was filmed, it was just, everything was so cheesy.
There was another moment. Sorry.
No, it's okay, go on.
And Xavier finally gets to figure out what Sebastian's plans are. I think it's through January Jones. I can't remember how he gets the information, but he's like, he sees the visuals of what Sebastian's plans are, and it's like stock footage of like an atomic bomb going off, and then it looks like something from Lord of the Rings, and then there's some like graphic design of, you know, like the world and all these bombs going off. What are we watching?
Really funny. There was so much stock footage of bombs going off in this movie. I really did it a bunch of times. It's ridiculous. Like I was entertained by this movie, but not because it was good. So I feel like if I had watched it,
it didn't hit that so bad. It's good.
Okay.
I was just the entire time like, I felt so bad for the people around me because I was moving around in my seat. I think I made 8 pages of notes of how awful the movie is. And
do you take
I was
notes
like,
when you watch movies?
Yeah, I do.
Really?
I have a really terrible memory. But it's just like, I think my face started hurting from like rolling my eyes too much. And it's just like, I was just like, I need to get out of here. This is awful.
Yeah, I get that.
So
I think I was seeing it with people who were all pretty much on the same page as me, so we could just sort of like look at one another and make stupid jokes. And like, I feel like I would watch this movie as like a midnight movie, like where everyone's really drunk. It would be a really fun experience. And it's like,
Alex, I actually wanted to ask you something. In the movie, they changed the origins for like Cerebro and the helmet,
everyone,
and the ship. And, like, while I was watching it, I felt like, personally offended when they changed the origins of everything. Because I thought it was all attributed to Eric and Xavier, and apparently it wasn't.
Exactly. I actually thought I had a big issue with that, too, mainly because, like, I don't mind changing some things from the comics. They've always done that. The other three films, I get it. You know, it's okay. We're not going to have a direct adaptation. But there are some things you shouldn't change. And I was frustrated because by attributing, like, the so much to Beast, and then who's like, you know, like 17 inventing all the stuff, and then also the helmet, Magneto's helmet was just like designed by Russians ambiguously, like somehow they knew how to make a helmet ward off against telepaths, because I think that takes, because the fact is, like, Magneto and Xavier are geniuses, like actual geniuses, And it, like, the fact that Magneto designed the helmet himself, and that Xavier designed Cerebro himself, like, with the help of Moira McTaggart, actually, because in the comics, she's, like, she's not a, like, CIA person.
Yeah.
She's a scientist and a geneticist. But, yeah, so I thought, like, those are hints at how, you know, these people are extremely intelligent, whereas here they need, like, Magneto just steals his helmet, and that becomes his signature costume. I thought that really lowered it. Like, it's not anymore.
It even, like, I was kind of angry at that point, and then Mystique's like, and then you can be Magneto, and you can be Professor X.
Oh, yeah, that's
just randomly turning names to you. Like, I was, like, rage. It's true. Like, I hated all the friggin' teenagers. I mean, they turned Havoc and Banshee into dude bros, and just, like, assholes. And, of course, oh, my God, I could not believe that the black guy died first. I'm sorry, but really?
The black guy dies first. No, the black guy dies first, and the only other ethnic mutant goes to the bad guy's team.
Yeah.
And then it's left with all white people,
obviously. Well, it is the 60s.
Yeah, but this is just, like, there's all those...
The fact that it's based on the civil rights.
Yeah, yeah. The civil rights, and then the Holocaust freaking starts the movie.
I know. The X-Men have always, like, the whole point of the X-Men is they represent every, like, disenfranchised group in the real world. Like, now it's more, like, you can think of them as applied to gay rights. You know, in terms of, like, not being able to marry or having to, like, call, you know, like, write on forms that your sexuality.
Yeah.
But then in the past, of course, it's like, various civil rights movements, and that's always what it stood for, and you're kind of taking that away when you make them the least diverse group of people in the world.
It's like, mutant and proud, but it's all, like, white kids.
Exactly. It's, yeah, but honestly, when the, I know that's a spoiler, but when Darwin died, I think I actually was like, really? Like, in the theater, because it was just the stupidest thing. And I was so pissed at Oliver Platt, because I love him, and because his character, like, never even got a name, and yeah. He was so cute, and then he was in the film for, like, one scene. It's ridiculous, but, yeah, there's, so much wrong.
And, like, we also talk about how every single female character is either naked, in lingerie, or has the tiniest skirt in the world.
Laura McTaggart wore clothes.
Yeah, but
she
wore
lingerie. Never mind.
She wore tiny skirts all the time.
You're right. Rose Byrne was, yeah. No, I know. I mean, well, that's a thing I've always wondered about the older movies with Mystique specifically.
Yeah.
Something about that is that, okay, I'm going to go, we're going to nerd out for a second here and just give you some context. All right. So Mystique, right? One of my absolute favorite characters in any comic. I love her. I have her, like, solo series that was 24 issues that no one ever read but me. I get made fun of in comic shops when I ask for it. Yeah. She's awesome. And what happened is her regular look normally is she just has blue skin. She's, like, regular looking, but she has blue skin. She wears clothing, a novel idea, and she's got, like, red hair that isn't slicked back and disgusting looking like it is in the movies. It's, like, regular red hair.
Yeah.
But then something, I forget exactly what happens, something or other happens at some point, and she's sort of altered to become that, like, scaly look like she is in the film. But that's, like, a minor thing, and they kind of gave up on that idea, like, a few issues later, and she decided that she preferred her regular blue look, so she's always drawn in the original way, and the idea is she's transforming herself to be blue and not scaly. Mm-hmm. The idea is that's how she feels more comfortable, that's how she actually feels like she should look. But her base form is the scaly look. So I always thought it weird that the movies took this kind of weird, like, I barely remember that storyline. It's this sort of strange little thing in the comic and made it the movie thing. But then I realized, well, they wanted Rebecca Romijn Stamos to walk around naked. Okay. So I've always thought that was stupid. And it's even oddly true in some ways. It's really dumb. And then the thing with Emma Frost is that she's part of the Hellfire Club, which they do not explain in the movie. But it's a group of really rich aristocrats, and it's, like, centuries old or something, and it's just, like, for really rich people, but the inner circle is secretly mutants. And they have all this wealth and power and influence, and they use their status to like effect change across the world and just gain power for themselves. And they're sort of like aristocratic villains, you know. They don't get dirty, and they take inspiration from like Victorian fashion. And so they wear like old style suits, and a lot of the women wear like corset, and like so they dress in the Victorian outfits. And so that whole thing is actually in the comics, but they in the film they make it there's no reason behind it. She's just wearing lingerie for no reason, and it looks really stupid and tacky. Whereas in the comic, I actually think it looks cool because I like the sort of older style of it. I mean, yes, it's still scantily clad women, but it's like the corsets and it's the whole like it's the whole image of the club. Like it kind of makes sense in the context when you're reading it. It doesn't feel as exploitative. Whereas in the film, it's just oh, this woman for no reason at all whatsoever just walks around in like a white bra and miniskirt. Okay, even when she's in like Russia. But, yeah, so that did, that is very frustrating. And obviously, yeah, the one about the character who is a stripper, she's a newer character and I don't really know her, so I don't know how she really dresses, but still very frustrating.
Her fight with, is it Banshee? At the end? Banshee?
Yes, because they both fly. Yeah, I remember. Right.
Yeah, okay. Like, I don't actually
know. Sorry, I'm, like, remembering the scene. Yeah, yeah.
So that's, like, the B fight. Right then. They're having this secondary fight while the awesome fight is actually happening. And they're just flying around looking like idiots with wings and like these weird fake wings. And I'm like, this is seriously the secondary fight? Where, as in previous X-Men movies, it was like Pyro like battling with his ex-best friend and it was just like badass awesome. And now it's just like people flying around. And it's just so disappointing.
Yeah, it. A lot of the action I didn't think was especially done well or exciting. I thought everything with Magneto was awesome. Like, the one thing this movie did right was Magneto, I thought. He was so badass, and I liked Michael Fassbender. And I just think the character was done well. I'm not sold on James McAvoy. I know a lot of people like him. I didn't think this was good casting. I had nothing against him, but yeah. I don't think he did well as Xavier.
It wasn't very good, and yeah. I think he did the drunken buffoon part pretty well. Like, I actually liked him in those scenes.
Those were funny, yeah. I felt like they kind of lost track of the Xavier character. Like, he didn't really make sense the way that he was being written and played. And the fact that he wasn't bald made me personally frustrated because, guess what? Xavier's been bald since he was a kid. He just is bald. That's the way it is. He's also not British, but okay.
That's the main plot point of the next movie, is how he loses his hair.
Because we already know where he lost his legs, yeah.
Yep.
That was another really funny, I mean, sorry, spoiler alert again, but honestly, I don't care. But just the part at the end where he has to let us know, I can't feel my legs. Yelling dramatically into the air, and you're like, oh, God. It's so ridiculous. What a movie. And I think the last thing, the one thing I find a little confusing is I don't know how much this is supposed to tie in to the older ones. Because it's a prequel, but it's also a reboot. And some things make sense in context to the later films. I mean, sorry, to the later chronologically films.
Yeah.
And some things don't. So it just seems like it's sort of in this in-between place. And I don't know.
I felt it undermined everything. I just, like, watching the movie, I'm like, this is not supposed to happen. This isn't how it's supposed to be. And I was just upset the entire time because walking into the movie, I thought it was a prequel, not a reboot.
Right.
And that's how they kind of treated it, as if it were a prequel, but it doesn't feel like it.
Yeah, because they had the very specific winks. Like, there's the I liked the cameo. Which, should I don't know, is it a secret? Should I say it?
Go for it.
Where they use the F word.
Oh, yeah.
And it was awesome.
Yeah, that's my favorite scene in the entire movie.
Me too.
It tells the movie to fuck itself.
I was like, yes, let's go hang out with this guy instead. But, like, so that was obviously a very specific reference. They had a part where Mystique morphs into Rebecca Romijn. Uh-huh. Because it's like, oh, do you want me older? You know, there are a few little specific references, but then other things don't at all make sense, like the fact that in the third film, loath as I am to even bring that one up, Moira is in it, and she's, you know, not American. She's like a doctor, you know. I mean, I think she's played by Olivia Williams. I forget if she's Scottish. She's at the very least British. You know, and like, and I mean, they got a lot of nationalities confused in this movie, definitely. But yeah, and just there are a lot of little things that don't make sense. And like the way Beast was done, and I don't, and the fact that one thing I really hated is that Havoc, you know, the dude bro jerks, he's got like the red.
When he first uses his power, it looks like he's hula hooping.
Oh my gosh, the exact same thing.
Yeah.
He's like, really? But, yeah, so Havoc, in the comics, is Scott Summers, Cyclops' younger brother.
That is awesome.
Yeah, and his powers aren't quite so lame, because basically the thing is that they, both of their, again, super nerdery here, both of their powers, Cyclops and Havoc, are sort of the same thing, and they're not, they don't set things on fire. It's a concussive force, and it's, they get their power from the sun, and they need the ruby quartz to hold it in or whatever. So Havoc's thing is that he can do the same thing Scott can do, only he can control it better because it's not, like, constantly leaking out of his eyes. And yeah, it comes through, like, he has, like, a pad in his chest that, like, lets him control it. So the hula hoop thing is made up. But it's a similar kind of idea to what he can do. But the thing is, so when I saw he was going to be in this movie, like, before it came out, I was like, that's weird. That's Scott Summers' younger brother. Obviously, he can't be around in the 60s, so I guess he's going to be a different character. Like, I thought they'd give him a different name.
Yeah.
But they said, when they introduced him, Alex Summers. I'm like, wait, really? You don't think this is going to confuse people? Like, anyone who remembers Scott Summers from the earlier films, and if you haven't read the comics, like, I would find that very confusing. And I found that kind of thing really, like, that obviously does not tie in well with, do you see a young Scott Summers? But it's, like, 1962. How old is he in 2000? Is he 40? Or, like, 45? That doesn't make sense. And Storm's there, too. Like, the chronology doesn't work out at all. And so I hate that. I wish they had not made it seem like a prequel. Why have those references to later films if you're going to then totally contradict yourself in other parts? You know, it's just confusing. Anyway, sorry. The end. I'm trying not to talk about the comics too much. I'm really doing my best here, you guys. It's got, like, an 8.2 on IMDb.
Kind of incredible.
God. Right? I know.
Oh, my God.
I'm sure this is just, like, the summer high that people get when they go to see an action movie, their superhero movie.
Because it was, like, it was entertaining. I wasn't bored by it. I could see audiences enjoying themselves.
I was bored by it. There was a point I was counting the amount of glossettes I had in my hand, like, to entertain myself. This movie was awful.
Sorry.
Well, at least they didn't like
it. I have confidence that Captain America will be okay and that Green Lantern will be okay. There's superhero movies coming out.
I think Captain America will be alright. I watched the Green Lantern trailers and I'm like, are you freaking kidding me? And then I turn it off.
My thing is, I like Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah, I do too.
So I think that's what's giving me confidence. Otherwise, I don't actually know what it's going to be. And it's got a, what's his name in it? Who's the bad guy in Green Lantern?
Is it
Peter Skarsgård?
Oh, yeah, he's good.
It looks funny because he's got the big brain, but I like him as an actor, so I don't know. I don't think it's going to be a great movie, but it looks like it'll be okay and probably better than X-Men.
I don't know. When you have Blake Lively as the actress, that's kind of...
I'm trying to ignore that fact. Also, can I just say those naked pictures of her are so clearly not her?
Right? There are naked pictures of her?
I've stopped looking at all promotional material.
There was, like, a big scandal, like, last week because there were, like, naked pictures of, like, Lively released. And it's, like, her taking pictures with, like, a camera, but it's obscuring her face. Like, the camera is in front of her face, and it's in a mirror. But she is, like, suing the sites that put it up or something. Or she's saying, no, those pictures aren't of me. But also, you can't put them on the internet. But if they're not pictures of her, she doesn't own any claim. She doesn't claim them.
Yeah.
Because of someone else. So it doesn't make sense. Why would she say you're not allowed to put them up if they're not her, you know? But I looked at the pictures, and they're really clearly not her, if you ask me. I don't know. Like, you see her face in one of them, and it's not her face. Anyway, sorry, I was just thinking about Quick Lively Away Naked. Anyway. I know it's gross. You don't want to think about it. I don't either. I don't like her. Hopefully the summer will yield better movies, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah. I have hopes for Captain America. That looks good.
Yeah, I like the sort of the 40s, I like the historical setting of it, and
World War II, and it's got that guy in it.
Hugo Weaving?
Sure. I was thinking the main character. Who is the main character? But I like Hugo Weaving, too.
Chris Evans?
Yeah, Chris Evans.
Chris Evans, there
Chris
we go.
Evans. Yeah.
He's Evil Axe number 2?
Oh, yeah! I forgot about that. See, I find Chris Evans to be sort of a generic kind of a guy. Like, I confuse him with, like, 6 other actors who look just like him.
Yeah.
I don't hate him or anything, I don't, like...
Yeah, he's not particularly memorable.
But thinking of him in Scott Pilgrim, he was very good in that movie.
Yeah.
He was funny. So, yeah, I'll remember him as that. That's easier. But, yeah.
All right. Close it down.
Push it down.
I don't know why, but I keep... like talking very strangely today. I was at work and I was like, "Ooh, we need more of these, like something fierce." And the person just sort of gave me this look like, "Did you really just say that?"
That's awesome. Well, now you have to start saying that everything is Mitch.
Okay.
We gotta carry that on. You haven't even seen Super 8, but just trust us.
All right.
That's Mitch.
It means something's good, FYI. But yeah, I guess I don't anyone have any news or significant events happening.
No. Nope.
Yeah, we're post X-Men depression right now.
Oh, God, no, I have to go watch something good. We all have Terrence Malick.
Yeah, it's true.
Days of Heaven, an hour and a half.
Is that a good movie?
I have no idea, but apparently it's all shot at like twilight.
Huh.
So they could only. Twilight lasts, what, like 15 minutes?
Oh, well, that's golden hour.
Yeah,
golden hour. So that's, like, the traditional time to film in outdoor scenes if you don't want any extra lighting brought in.
Yeah. Well, the entire movie was apparently filmed in this, so they only had, like, 30 seconds to a minute of actual usable footage every day.
Wow.
That's intense.
So, we'll see how that goes.
Okay, I guess sign off.
Yeah.
We're just kind of like blasé right now.
Whatever.
Anyway, so this has been Some Cast It Hot episode 13. And I'm Allison from nerdvampire.wordpress.com.
I'm Alex from filmforager.com.
And I'm Sasha from finalgirlproject.com.
Thanks for listening. So